We are in the book of Exodus, in chapter 2. The first part, or major part of the book of Exodus, is about Israel in Egypt. And last week we looked at the first subsection of the first part of Exodus in Israel in Egypt. And we saw how Satan opposed, of course unsuccessfully, he opposed the birth of a nation. Because we know that what happened there was that God has brought a small group of people, his chosen people, to Egypt, a place of riches and abundance in the midst of famine. And the days, or history turned somehow against the people of Israel because a dynasty came to power in Egypt that knew not Joseph. And they hated shepherds. And they wanted to destroy the people of Israel. And especially they got very... worried was when they saw that the people of Israel were multiplying fast. And I heard someone said once when I was very disappointed when it was said, you know, about a certain religious group to be put on a moratorium of some years so that they don't come to Australia because we will be outborn by them because they have many children. And it's usually, this is a very, humanistic, very fleshly thought that one can stop a nation from growing by different artificial rules made by men. And we saw that there were three, I'm not repeating the sermon, I just want to give you highlights. There were three attempts, serious attempts of Pharaoh to destroy Israel. The first one was hard labor. The next one was forced labor. And then genocide, which had two aspects. One was birth control. They wanted to stop the male children from multiplying. So whenever a male child was born, the midwives had to kill the male child. And then when that did not work, Brother Andrew read for us the last verse, verse 22 in chapter 1, that when Pharaoh saw that that didn't work, he ordered that and commanded all his people, saying that every son who is born, every son, that's male child, you shall cast in the river. And every daughter you shall save alive. Now, from the start of this study, the book of Exodus, I want us to learn one thing. Whatever we see in this book of Exodus, and in all Pentateuch, all five books of Moses, we see God at work in the life of his people, with his people, for his people, through his people. Everything that we see there actually points to only one, God. He is the one that works. He is the one that established the covenant, originated, initiated it. He established it. He took care step by step that the covenant will be fulfilled to the letter. And before we go any further, I'd like us to remember the promise of God to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15. Everything is governed by what God says there. We should never forget at any step in as we go through Exodus what God said in Genesis 15. In verse 13, then he said to Abram, so before he was called Abraham, it's Abram. He said to Abram, "Know certainly." This is powerful, isn't it? Know for sure. Know certainly. Jesus would express it in the New Testament. Amen, amen. Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And also the nation whom they serve, I will judge. Afterward, they shall come out with great possessions. So this is the key to the interpretation of the whole book of Exodus. Now, what does Exodus mean? It's a name coming from the Greek language. I can prove to you that every word in every language comes from the Greek, someone said in a silly movie. But it's somewhat true, because God has poured so much wisdom in those people and made that language so rich and so powerful in expression that it can be true. But not that, just about every language. Exodus is formed out of two different words. It's ex, which is a particle, a preposition that means out of, and odos, which means road or way. And you could say the way out, the exit. The exit, it's a little bit more vague, but the way out, the coming out, the going out of Israel out of Egypt. It happened not by revolution. We saw that declaration in Genesis 15. That nation I will judge and I will bring you out. So what do we expect at every step, whenever an event is announced in the narrative, we should expect that thing. That it is not the people that had a popular movement, revolution or some kind of a war of liberation. It was God who did it. I will judge that nation. I will do it. And that's what you see at every step. It was God against the gods of Egypt. It is God against the human power of Egypt. It is God against the army without an equal in those days of the Egyptians. They were growing stronger and stronger. And what we see going out of there, now I think I'm jumping the gun a little bit. I'm going ahead of myself. What we see there is that really there was not a United Nations, and not the United Nations, was not a unified nation that came out of Egypt, but it was rubble, kind of a mixed multitude of people without a unique or unified law or rule, people who were not even sure about the name of their God. Through their journey, or during their journey through the wilderness, God actually turns them into a unified people. And yet, not unified, as in the days when all the tribes of Israel named David to be their king. That was for the first time when Israel is a solid nation. Up to that point, they were more like a union of tribes, but not really a united nation, a unified nation. I don't know how right it is to keep on saying united nation. Unified, I think, is better, is it? Teach me English. I'm, a stranger here. Okay. So that's what we see. I said this as ground rules for us in our approach to understanding the book of Exodus. Why am I saying this? Is because even what I would call the title of this message, we're talking here about the deliverer, or a deliverer is born, but I will refer to him, and we should refer to him as God's deliverer, not that he delivered God, but is the deliverer provided by God. Something very interesting comes out of the story here. We are being told A wonderful thing about Moses before he was born. He was born in the midst of a genocide period. Okay? And he fully depended on God, on God's protection. He was to be a mediator between God's people and God. So he would have what they falsely and wrongly call these days sacerdotal function, sanctified function, mysterious function, or a function of one who is in charge of mysteries, like the Catholic or Orthodox priests claim, and there are others who believe that somehow they have special powers. But Moses is in that position, and if you want, he is the first type of, the first, I'd call him a sacerdotal kind of hero. Sacerdotal comes from sacrum, which is a Latin parallel of mysterious, mystery. Or the word sacred that we have in English, which is close to holy. But holy has that, is holy in the meaning of holy as being someone set apart. So this is what Moses was. A man of the house of Levi. And if we go back and look at the genealogies, as we will see later, as they will come, not today, in the text, he's from the Kohathite, branch. Of the sons of Levi. So he's a Kohathite. But we also know about the tribe of Levi that later on, they will be actually pronounced by God, as being the priestly branch of the family. The Levites, the ones who had no inheritance in Israel, it came in a way like a punishment, but in all also like an ongoing lesson to remind them that violence is not a good thing. Here we are, we can't go away from Genesis, can we? In Jacob's blessings to his sons, Simeon and Levi, verse Genesis 49:5, Simeon and Levi are brothers, said Jacob. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling places. Let not my soul enter their council. You know, that's referring to the time when they destroyed Shechem, and they killed those people. They used trickery and all that, and they were violent people. Let not my soul enter their council, let not my honor be united to their assembly. No good words. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. These were not good words. And they had to remember for the rest of their lives, that violence is not the way approved by God. And instead of people who will counsel the death, or who would plot the death of other people, they had to be a class, a group of people that would be mediators, that will work up for the peace between man and God. This is important to remember. God prophesied that through the mouth of Jacob. And here we see, and I believe this is towards the end of the period, more than 400 years after, at least 413 years after, 430, yeah, about 413 years later, we see this happening here. Over 400 years, okay, put it like that. A man of the house of Levi went and took a wife, a daughter of Levi. So he was intermarriages within the same tribe. And there is a reason why. We'll see when we go, you know, if we live that long, when we get to how the land was divided, we will see why this is so. It's because of the laws of inheritance. Poor property is sacred in the Bible. Communism has no place in the Bible because communism does away with this. They have no respect for property. But God didn't want the property, the inheritance, to ever be alienated. He wanted it to be kept within the family. That's why they had those marriages within the same tribe. Of course, that was not a rigid law. Yet, it was observed as closely as possible. This here shows that the first priestly family, if you want, in Israel, was a pure from that ethnic, if you want. Its ethnicity was pure. It was in the sense, not that something is impure, but was just within the tribe of Levi. The first thing about Moses. She conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. You know, even the frog will say that her child is the most beautiful. We all love our babies and our children. And whenever a baby is born, the parents think that that's the most beautiful baby in the world. So think the grandparents too. They have to be a little bit more, make more allowances because they have many and they have to say the same thing about everyone. So you must go wrong sometime. I don't know how it works. I'm not God, but we think so. But here the word really is not simply beautiful. The word is tov in Hebrew, which means good. He was a goodly child, meaning he looked healthy and he looked good, and I accept he was beautiful. They are all meanings of the word tov, but tov is a lot more than simply beautiful. He was good in every way. And I'll say, he was chosen by God for a function, and even from birth he was endued with the qualities that he had to have as a representative of his people before men and before God. Very rarely you find a description like this in the Bible. There is one, I think, about Samuel, and there is another one about the Lord Jesus Christ. Moses is a very important figure in the life of Israel, in the history of Israel. And he's looked at as that kind of a man, good in every way. This is how God prepares his people. She decided to go against that edict. Or a royal decree from chapter 1, verse 22. She did not want to kill her son, to throw him in Egypt. But she conceived something in her mind that I believe if she would ever be asked, interrogated, she could swear by the most holy things that she put the child in the river. Now here we have a contention between two gods. Nile was one of the gods of Egypt. And in the river, there was another god they worshipped, the big crocodile. And God had to cancel this. So Moses was born in the place of death, and he was saved in the place of death. And if I can say it before we finish the message, say it now. He grew up and lived later on in the house of death. In the house of the arch enemies. Like Jesus. When Jesus was born, remember Herod ordered all the babies, 2 years and younger, to be killed. So that somehow, perchance, he will get to the baby Jesus, whom he didn't know exactly, and get rid of him too. You see here how closely God works. It's always God that provides the Redeemer and the redemption. It is not man. Okay. So here there is a hard task for God, an impossible task for man. God had to save Moses. His mother put him in a basket. In a basket made out of bulrushes. We used to buy them. We didn't make them at home. I would have known how to make one of those baskets. But we would buy them. And you buy them in the shops these days. You can buy those made out of different materials. But even those, you know, buy baskets made out of reeds. And she waterproofed it with pitch, just like Noah did to the ark. So she waterproofed it with pitch and put the child in and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. So she put him in the water, and she didn't know that this son will be the one that will have to redeem Israel. Put him there where Pharaoh said that he should be put. And I don't know if she said that, but she could have said, "Go with God." It's one of the most beautiful Spanish greetings. You know, when they say, "Vaya con Dios," go with God. It's said in many Christian languages. And it's wonderful. Okay, so what's happening? Nile doesn't win. Because this was close to the place where the daughter of Pharaoh, who was to inherit the throne, she was bathing in the water near that place, and she heard the baby cry. She actually reacted to the first cry. She didn't hope that somebody else would hear the cry and get up. So she would go to, this is an internal thing, so you waste your time. She was curious. And she sends, you know, some of the servants, slave girls there to go and attend to whatever was there. And there was this little ark. This little ark in which Moses was saved. And that's why anything that is designed even to save nature these days is called nature's ark. And we had Noah's ark, which was a boat, was not an ark. But everything that is meant to save people is called golden ark. The ark of the covenant was not an ark, it was a box of acacia plated with gold and a few things in there. So she saw this little baby, and when she saw him, verse 6, the baby wept. He did what all the babies do. So when the babies weep, it's not because they are bad, because they are babies. So she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Wow, what a discovery. This is one that should be dead. And this Nile worshiper takes the prey out of the laps of Nile. That child was offered to the god Nile, but by Yahweh's order, one of those who worship the Nile is used as an instrument now to save this child and take it away from the jaws of that pagan false god. So this is the first victory of God in that battle for his people. In Egypt, he punished the Nile. You may have all the other children, but not this one. And I don't know how many children ended up being there, because it seemed that with all these attempts and hard work of Pharaoh to stop them from multiplying, did not have any result, any favorable result to him. The nation continued to increase. Now she is worried because she had no children of her own. She was probably not even married. And She couldn't raise this child who would be at the nursing age. He will need the mother's breast in order to survive. But Miriam, that's how we find out that Moses had a sister. Later on we find out that he had a brother too. Some people think Moses was the firstborn, but it seems that his brother and sister, his siblings, were older than him. Miriam was there, and I think the people are wrong when they say, some commentators say that she was at least 3 years old. She was a lot older than that, because she was able to follow the little ark and watch to see what's happening. When the Pharaoh's daughter looked at the child and probably the girl listened. She was probably saying, how am I going to feed him? How am I going to raise him? It's going to be impossible. And the girl barged in and she comes and says, I can help. She said, shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you? So this is how God works. And often God uses people and uses what the people think that they are smart. It is God working through them. And the child who was supposed to be thrown in the river to die ends up being actually being raised by his own mother. He was 3 months old, but she probably grew up with his mother until she was probably 2 or 3 years old, when she was weaned and he could start feeding on normal food. And he was brought back to Pharaoh's house, the house of those who wanted to kill him. And she gave him a name, Moses. Moses, which means drawn out or pulled out. So the one who was pulled out will lead the people in the way out, in the Exodus. He has a wonderful name. I would push it a little bit further and say, he could have been called the redeemed, the rescued, the delivered, drawn out from death, as it were, just like God has found us on the way to eternal damnation, and he pulled us out. And many go before the Lord like branches plucked out of the fire. So here we have a redeemer that was redeemed himself, one that was drawn out indirectly by the hand of God. He was to be later on called to pull out God's people out of Egypt and deliver them. It's wonderful. Whenever, it doesn't matter how long we read here and we try to do all sorts of extrapolations, connections between this text and other places in the Bible, we won't be able to get any other result. This is the beginning of a wonderful report of God's direct work and fighting to fight for his people. Even, again, I'm saying it before time, when they reach the Red Sea, and they thought that that's the end, they are finished, God is telling them, God will do the battle for you. They did not have to do anything. So this is what I believe is important for tonight, and we should keep this one in mind, that God is bringing the deliverer. He is a man, but God does everything. He controls all the events and is using the events. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. This is the central theme of the whole Bible, and is definitely the theme of the book of Exodus, which we will follow in the coming months. May the Lord help us trust in Him. Because we will grow to trust Him more and more when we see how wonderfully He worked in order to accomplish His plan of redemption for everyone. Never give up in your fight or in your hope when you see that troubles increase. When you see that the problems increase in number and intensity. For look what happened here. And look a little bit earlier, as the book of Hebrews describes it, out of one man almost dead, and a woman well past of the age of bearing children, he brought Isaac. And so on, God is working His miracles to bring up a people that will be called by His name. And out of you and me, God has also made a people with an eternal destiny, an eternal end, if there will be an end, destination, out of people who were facing eternal damnation. May the Lord help us to trust in Him and never to lose heart.